It is time now for History Matters, featuring the one, the only, Scott Washington, historian extraordinaire, who joins us here in the studio with a look back at this week in history. How are you?
And what a great week it is to look back. In fact, actually, earlier today, we're just seeing history happening right
Absolutely,
in front of our eyes,
yeah.
Which is kind of amazing. But, you know, when I hear that wonderful theme play, I just feel the world is a better place somehow. And it reminds me of something that here's a good question, which is, when did the Revolutionary War end?
Was it this week in history, Scott?
Yes, it is this week in history. Actually, you're right, because, of course, we all know in 1781, Cornwallis gets defeated at Yorktown. We think, da-da, that's the end of the war. No,
yeah.
It takes another 2 years while peace treaty is worked out, finally signed in Paris, and there's British troops right here in the Americas. So everything's kind of uneasy.
Yeah.
And that treaty is signed on January...
Tuesday.
It was actually the Treaty of Paris was signed January 14th, 1784. And then it takes another time. A proclamation is issued April 11, 1783, mm-hmm. declaring a cessation of arms against Great Britain. Congress approves preliminary articles of peace April 15th, 1783. And finally, the Treaty of Paris was ratified on January 14th.
It's incredible how long that takes.
Oh,
you think
gosh.
Cornwallis surrendering, that's the end. But it's 2.5 years after that.
Yeah, and you know what? This is a really a big factor that is not always considered in terms of the Revolutionary War, which is the sheer distance between England and America.
Mm-hmm.
It takes about 6 weeks with a good wind to go one way between London and here on the East Coast, and then another 6 weeks to go back. And you can see that there's a long period of time. And so when finally it's when the early, we're not even talking about the Congress as under this Constitution, it's under the Articles of the Confederation,
right.
They're meeting in Maryland, and they finally say, oh, yes, we should finally issue some proclamation recognizing the end of the war, because we think that's the appropriate thing to do.
It's the sort of information that they should let people know about, you would think. Yeah.
Better late than never, but I think that's, if you ever wanted to have one of those bets, when is it? Well, it's January 14th, 1784. That happened.
It is a fascinating thing, because now we take for granted that we can communicate with people on the other side of the world in the blink of an eye, or maybe with a second or two delay. We can travel from here to another part of the world in a day or two, but it's a very different world in the 1780s, and it really changes the way you think about the world that you live in.
Well, and I'm so glad you mentioned that, because something else happens this week. January 19th, and it was 1903, mm-hmm. is when the first transatlantic radio broadcast occurs between Cape Cod, Massachusetts, and Cornwall, England, with greetings exchanged between King Edward the VII and U.S. President Theodore Roosevelt. Now, you know, that's the blink of an eye is approximately there. You have the laying of the cable across the Atlantic. I mean, that changes everything. But it also explains a lot of what happens in the Revolutionary War, because there's this gap. And there's another thing that comes up this week, Queen's College, the laws. And here, this is just baffling to think of. Here is the colonies, they're growing, laws get passed. But they have to be sent over to England.
Mm.
They have to be vetted.
Right.
And then it has to be they approve it or disapprove it. And very often, I've seen some of the colonial records where it's like, no, we're not going to approve that. And one of them was Queen's College. It gets approved here in North Carolina. Great idea. Let's start one. And within a year
what
and a half.
What year was this?
This was 1771,
okay.
January 15th. And that's the same date when the Riot Act gets passed.
Mm-hmm.
It takes another year and a half before finally going through the Privy Council and the Board of Trade. Finally, no, we don't approve this, so no, you can't.
Is there a rationale? Or
they just felt that it
not
was
a big fan of book learning,
Brits? There was some question about, at that point, since it was the King of England, what would that suggest?
Okay.
So they backed away from that and said no. But that was so often was this arbitrariness that happens again and again.
Interesting.
In terms of the interpretation and coming back and saying no. North Carolina makes a huge appeal. Whether you were for the colonies or against the colonies, it didn't matter. There wasn't enough money in circulation. And so they said, can we print money? Mm-hmm. And Britain says no.
No.
And
yeah.
A lot of this is because Great Britain was the major trading partner. And the vendors in England did not want to deal with credit and currency from America. They wanted cash, which worked really good for the people on the coast, but the folks inland here in what we call Orange County today, that wasn't such a great idea.
Well, that's Shays Rebellion, too, in Massachusetts,
exactly.
Right? And it's the same people on the coast have the physical money and people inland don't, and they want paper money and they keep getting denied. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. So what ends up happening with Queen's College? Does it never come to fruition?
Oh, no, it comes back.
Okay.
And here is a kind of a local twist on that. 1857, the Burwells are from the Burwell School in Hillsborough that started that with the connection with Elizabeth Keckley and later on the Civil War with Mary Todd Lincoln. Well, they get recruited and help found what becomes Queen's University in Charlotte. And they're instrumental in that. They do a lot with education. But that's one of the things. But it just is, no, it stops.
Right.
Everything stops in
and
the
1850s. And that's not until the 1850s. So
that's right. Late
1850s. So nothing happens with Queen's College. That changes Chapel Hill, right?
That
Had they approved Queen's College, that would have been North Carolina's university, presumably.
It could have been, though it was farther out. It was in Charlotte. So it's a little bit farther afield.
Chapel Hill was pretty far afield in 1771.
Yes, it was.
So, yeah.
That's right. Well, there was the hope was that and certainly the people in Hillsborough had some say so because there was a lot of pull.
Right.
Where was this going to be a college here in the Carolinas? And say so James Hogue from Scotland. But his name was spelled H-O-G-G, so guess
what? Now we named Hogday after him,
yeah. Well, I'm not sure, but that was just the thing. He's like, no, it's not Hog, it's Hogue.
Hogue.
Well, he had land, and he had land at Cross Creek, which is now Fayetteville, and he suggests this, and he's a very strong proponent of where UNC does develop, which is Chapel Hill.
Yeah.
But that's why they found something called Science Academy in Hillsborough, renovate an old church there that had gotten buffered during the Revolutionary War, the first St. Matthews, and they changed it into a modern academy, and that's where, of course, the Constitutional Convention takes place that's so pivotal to American history. So all this cool stuff.
It all does
come together.
Speaking with Scott Washington, History Matters, what else we got?
Okay, here is something. Now we're going to go up a couple, 250 years, space flight. Now, 1920, New York Times pens an editorial on January 13th, 1920, saying, space flight? No, rockets will never fly. That's ridiculous. And it takes them till 1969, after Apollo 11 goes to the moon, that they finally, belatedly, I think with a good sense of humor, said, well, okay, maybe so.
We might have gotten that one wrong,
And this is the same week, which appropriately enough is when Eugene Andrew Cernan dies April 16th, 2017, the American astronaut, the last American astronaut to actually step foot on the moon. And though there are some people saying, no, that couldn't have taken place. And it's like, yes, it did take place. But the scientists who were driving the kind of Apollo missions at that point said, we don't need to have someone go back. It's like saying, do we need to fly a plane to take a picture? Well, now we know we have drones.
Mm-hmm.
Same idea that there has been that kind of shift. Now, we probably will send people back up into space and the moon. Well, we do have the space shuttle, but, it's kind of nice to know that people with vision are the ones who keep pulling us forward and making us to look up and say, where are the stars in our own lives? Where are the goals that we haven't reached yet? That are out there that we should step towards.
It is, and we've talked about this before, just how fascinating it is and how fast air travel technology advanced in the 20th century. Yes. The New York Times is writing this editorial in 1920, and I can understand them saying that because we'd only just learned to fly less than two decades before.
Yes.
So it's still kind of in its infancy.
Well,
I can imagine them saying,
well,
and then
like balloon flights, you know,
well, you know,
okay. But controlled
the
flight.
Whole Wright Sorry, brothers control, thing. Yes, yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, we can control the balloon flight as well, but motorized flight.
Well,
stick a motor on the back of something and go up in the air. And then less than 50 years later, we're on the moon. It's incredible.
Yeah, and all the kind of science that goes into that, mm-hmm. which is, I think, just as important as anything else. Though I have to admit that this is also a week when talking about science and flight, that on January 18th, 1644, now we're going to wind the clock back.
Go all the way back.
Is
yep.
when one of the first UFO sightings
oh,
occurred
yes.
over Boston Harbor. Two lights with sparks flying between them spotted by some folks there. So.
Oh, those are just two time-traveling human beings in an argument.
Well, I just like to think that it got people's imagination going, saying whatever it was, gee, we should go up there too and cause people to look up. And I hope that that's what obviously happens in time.
Speaking with Scott Washington, it is History Matters. We got time for one more. What is it?
Okay. Well, I think this is kind of interesting. There's an expedition in 1840. I mean, talk about just exploration, whether it's outer space or the limits of imagination or even our own constitution. In 1840 is when Antarctica is quote-unquote discovered
mm-hmm.
and claimed for the United States. Of course, it is international now, so it is not the territory of one group. But this is a great time when people are still exploring. And just when you think, oh, we've found everything, trust me, there are great discoveries still to be found. And that's what history shows us.
Yep.
Every week.
And not just things to be discovered, but new advances in human science. We've been talking about controlled flight. This is also the week that a pilot used an ejector seat for the first time to get out of a scrape in the air.
Yes, so having that plan B is also
yes.
really important in life, as it is in aeronautics. That's right.
And that is History Matters for this week. As always, Scott Washington, thank you so much.
Keep flying high.